So let's continue in chapter 27, the Gnostic being. So Sri Aurobindo was describing how the creation of a supramental being would lead to the consummation of all the preceding steps of the evolution, that we would rise with a dominant principle of harmony to combine with a great light to move towards the elimination of all that has obstructed and blocked us from completion heretofore, that the evolution would proceed smoothly with the manifestation of a supramental being. We would move from darkness to light. We would move from insentience towards ananda. We would move to a recovery of our true being, from division to unity. So these will be the hallmarks which we'll continue to see in the coming pages as Sri Aurobindo describes this. He continues here. There is something in the nature of supermind itself that would make this great result inevitable. It is in its foundation a unitarian and integralizing and harmonic consciousness, and in its descent and evolutionary working out of the diversity of the infinite, it would not lose its unitarian trend, its push towards integralization, or its harmonic influence. So you see, here again, echoes of Satchit Ananda, unitarian, one in being, one in consciousness, integralizing, taking the several fabrics of our being and bringing them into a tight accord, harmonic consciousness, the harmony of the spirit, the ananda that's implied in that. The overmind follows out diversities and divergent possibilities on their own lines of divergence. It can allow contradictions and discords, but it makes them elements of a cosmic whole so that they are forced, however unwittingly and in spite of themselves, to contribute their share to its wholeness. So you can see that the overmind is a vast consciousness that assembles all things together. It's cosmic in its extent and its empire, but it does not resolve the inherent problems. It permits them to exist. Or we may say that it accepts and even encourages contradictions, but obliges them to support each other's existence so that there may be divergent roads of being and consciousness and experience that lead away from the one and from each other, but still maintain themselves on the oneness, and can lead back again, each on its own path, to the oneness. That is the secret sense even of our own world of ignorance, which works from the inconscience, but with the underlying cosmicity of the overmind principle. But the individual being in such a creation does not possess this secret principle and knowledge, and does not base upon it his action. So however cosmic it might be, still the puzzle for the individual is there. An overmind being here would perceive this secret, but he might still work on his own lines of nature and law of action, swabhava, swadharma, according to the inspiration, the dynamic control, or the inner governance of the spirit or the divine within him, and leave the rest to their own line in the whole. An overmind creation of knowledge in the ignorance might therefore be something separate from the surrounding world of ignorance and guarded from it by the luminous encircling and separating wall of its own principle. So, light, but constricted light. So here he describes that the individual truth, though it is cosmic in vision, is still limited in its impact and is not part of the wider whole. Swabhava, swadharma, terms that we're most familiar with in the Gita. Swabhava means, again, own being, and swadharma means one's own law of action. And we've spoken before about how one is contingent or extensive of the other. Swabhava is the spirit as conscious will. Then that conscious will works it out in a determined law of action, which is the swadharma. So if we have a soul essence, a fundamental being, then defining itself, placing itself into expression, it first forms itself in terms of its own being, swabhava, and then expresses itself through a dynamic nature, through a law of its own action, which is swadharma. The supramental Gnostic being, on the contrary, would not only found all his living on an intimate sense and effective realization of harmonic unity in his own inner and outer life or group life, but would create a harmonic unity also with the still surviving mental world, even if that world remained altogether a world of ignorance. So we've seen that Sri Aurobindo has described what even this great luminosity of the spirit in the world would be at the level of the overmind, expressing itself in swadharma and swabhava. But it wouldn't have this characteristic, this unique power of the supramental consciousness. This is the power that even has the ability to stretch itself into the mental world. What that must mean is that when that Gnostic consciousness meets its mental companions in the field of the world, that it would have a power which would convince, a power which would distribute light, a power which would convert ignorance to light, to make the mind as capable of knowledge as it might be. He continues, for the Gnostic consciousness in him would perceive and bring out the evolving truth and principle of harmony hidden in the formations of the ignorance. It would be natural to his sense of integrality, and it would be within his power to link them in a true order with his own Gnostic principle and the evolved truth and harmony of his own greater life creation. So we can see again, these powers that he's referred to here are elements of the original Satchit Ananda, which are hidden and buried in nature. But the supermind itself is the organized expression, insight of Satchit Ananda regarding itself, displaying its powers. So it would have the capacity to tickle into wakefulness all the sleeping elements of Satchit Ananda in an otherwise ignorant world. He continues, that might be impossible without a considerable change in the life of the world, but such a change would be a natural consequence of the appearance of a new power in nature and its universal influence. In the emergence of the Gnostic being would be the hope of a more harmonious evolutionary order in terrestrial nature. So here is the power that can not only express the consummation of evolution in an individual, but can reach its glow out into surrounding nature and carry the cosmic order forward, just as he had said a few paragraphs. It reaches back and felicitates all of the preceding evolutionary steps. A supramental or Gnostic race of beings would not be a race made according to a single type, molded in a single fixed pattern. For the law of the supermind is unity fulfilled in diversity, and therefore there would be an infinite diversity in the manifestation of the Gnostic consciousness, although that consciousness would still be one in its basis, in its constitution, in its all-revealing and all-uniting order. Not according to a single type. This is not uniformity. This is unity from the being out. So however the form expresses itself, there is unity in essence. The essence is never lost. It is evident that the triple status of the supermind would reproduce itself as a principle in this new manifestation. So the triple status of the supermind, which you remember from many, many chapters ago, that this original Satchit-Ananda, as it is organized into the creative consciousness of the supramental, has first a range of awareness where oneness dominates. Multiplicity is instinct within it, but still the oneness rules. In the second poise, the second status of the supermind, there is a balance. The diversity begins to come out, and it lives in harmonic perfection, in balance with the unity. So there is oneness and diversity. There is a broad distribution, but still kept within an all-reconciling unity. And then in the third poise, the third status of the supramental, that's where the diversity comes raining out. The unity is not lost, but it is somewhat in the background. And what stands out to the self-view of Satchit-Ananda, of the true being, the only being who is the diversity. Oneness is never gone, but the diversity manifests. So, in the primary, the first poise of the supermind, you see Sat, the purity of existence, demonstrated. In the second poise of the supermental, you see the dynamic power reach itself out and give full expression and yet retain its unity. There is where Chit Shakti comes to dance. And the third is when all is released into action, when all the multiplicity is given permission to move out without losing unity, and that is the play of delight. So Satchit-Ananda, even in the play of the supramental, fashions these three spans of supramental awareness and being. So let's read that again. It is evident that the triple status of the supermind would reproduce itself as a principle in this new manifestation. There would be below it, and yet belonging to it, the degrees of the overmind and intuitive gnosis with the souls that had realized these degrees of the ascending consciousness. There would be also at the summit, as the evolution in knowledge proceeded, individual beings who would ascend beyond a supermind formulation and reach from the highest height of supermind through the summits of Unitarian self-realization in the body, which must be the last and supreme state of the epiphany of the creation. So look what he's just said. He's described the whole chain of the superconscient being, which he begins with from below, with intuition. Remember, it's a ray of that supramental light, that sun. Then the overmind, that light which has become vast, which has become cosmic. The supermind, and then the supermind stretching back into the pure non-dimensionality of Satchit-Ananda. And that discovery in some beings going beyond the supramental back into that original status of Satchit-Ananda here in the body to bring that oneness of Satchit-Ananda into the gravity of this world. This is the supreme consummation for which the universe was born. But in the supramental race itself, in the variation of its degrees, the individuals would not be cast according to a single type of individuality. Each would be different from the other, a unique formation of the being, although one with all the rest in foundation of self and sense of oneness and in the principle of his being. It is only this general principle of the supramental existence of which we can attempt to form an idea, however diminished by the limitations of mental thought and mental language. A more living picture of the Gnostic being, supermind only could make. For the mind, some abstract outlines of it are alone possible. So first we must manifest supramental in order to know more about how it's going to work. I think he implies that we're invited to come along. The gnosis is the effective principle of the spirit, a highest dynamis of the spiritual existence. The Gnostic individual would be the consummation of the spiritual man. His whole way of being, thinking, living, acting would be governed by the power of a vast, universal spirituality. All the trinities of the spirit would be real to his self-awareness and realized in his inner life. The trinities of the spirit, Satchit-Ananda, obviously, but also how reality thinks about itself as a transcendence, as a universality, as an individuality. Or you could think of it in the traditional terms as Shiva, as Shakti, and as the Jiva. Shiva, the essential consciousness. Shakti, the power of that consciousness to move into creative expression. And the Jiva, who is one with both the power and the consciousness, expressive at the individual level of the larger realities of these two greater terms of being. All his existence would be fused into oneness with the transcendent and universal self and spirit. All his action would originate from and obey the supreme self and spirit's divine governance of nature. Here he describes transcendence. All life would have to him the sense of the conscious being, the Purusha within, finding its self-expression in nature. Purusha, Purushottama, nature, para prakriti, going back to the Gita, the great Vedantic formulation. Let's read that again. All life would have to him the sense of the conscious being, the Purusha within, finding its self-expression in nature. His life and all its thoughts, feelings, acts would be filled for him with that significance and built upon that foundation of its reality. He would feel the presence of the divine in every center of his consciousness, in every vibration of his life force, in every cell of his body. In all the workings of his force of nature, he would be aware of the workings of the Supreme World Mother, the Supernature. He would see his natural being as the becoming and manifestation of the power of the World Mother. In this consciousness, he would live and act in an entire transcendent freedom, a complete joy of the spirit, an entire identity with the cosmic self, and a spontaneous sympathy with all in the universe. All beings would be to him his own selves. All ways and powers of his consciousness would be felt as the ways and powers of his own universality. But in that inclusive universality, there would be no bondage to inferior forces, no deflection from his own highest truth, for this truth would envelop all truth of things and keep each in its own place in a relation of diversified harmony. It would not admit any confusion, clash, infringing of boundaries, any distortion of the different harmonies that constitute the total harmony. His own life and the world life would be to him like a perfect work of art. It would be as if the creation of a cosmic and spontaneous genius, infallible in its working out of a multitudinous order. The Gnostic individual would be in the world and of the world, but would also exceed it in his consciousness and live in his self of transcendence above it. He would be universal, but free in the universe, individual, but not limited by a separative individuality. The true person is not an isolated entity. His individuality is universal, for he individualizes the universe. It is at the same time divinely emergent in a spiritual air of transcendental infinity, like a high, cloud-surpassing summit, for he individualizes the divine transcendence. So he's covered all the forms of being. Transcendent, the formless, universal, the great form, individual, the microcosm. All awake to each other, each eye fully open. The three powers which present themselves to our life as the three keys to its mystery are the individual, the cosmic entity, and the reality present in both and beyond them. These three mysteries of existence would find in the life of the supramental being a united fulfillment of their harmony. He will be the perfected and complete individual, fulfilled in the satisfaction of his growth and self-expression. For all his elements would be carried to a highest degree and integrated in some kind of comprehensive largeness. What we are striving towards is completeness and harmony. An imperfection and incapacity, or a discord of our nature, is that from which inwardly we most suffer. But this is because of our incompleteness of being, our imperfect self-knowledge, our imperfect possession of ourself and our nature. But a complete self-knowledge in all things and at all moments is the gift of the supramental gnosis, and with it a complete self-mastery. Not merely in the sense of control of nature, but in the sense of a power of perfect self-expression in nature. Whatever knowledge of self there would be perfectly embodied in the will of the self, the will perfectly embodied in the action of the self. The result would be the self's complete dynamic self-formulation in its own nature. In the lower grades of Gnostic being, there would be a limitation of self-expression according to the variety of the nature, a limited perfection in order to formulate some side element or combined harmony of elements of some divine totality, a restricted selection of powers from the cosmic figure of the infinitely manifold One. So here is a consciousness that is in attunement with the supramental, but hasn't the power yet to express itself fully in the nature that it's attempting to govern. But in the supramental being, this need of limitation for perfection would disappear. The diversity would not be secured by limitation, but by a diversity in the power and hue of the supernature. The same whole of being and the same whole of nature would express themselves in an infinitely diverse fashion, for each being would be a new totality, harmony, self-equation of the one being. You remember, again, many chapters ago where Sri Aurobindo described this one being multiplied endlessly to the view. This is the nature of what he's expressing here. Two, the diversity that we seem to arrive at as we grow out of the inconscient seems to be done by disintegration, by walling off item from item, person from person. The walls of division are so apparent as we come out of the earliest stages of evolution. But here, he says, the diversity that's apparent to the supramental being is self-expressed by the supernature. It is not the supernature that is governed by the lower nature, but the supernature that governs the lower nature. And thus, this harmonic result obtains. What would be expressed in front or held behind at any moment would depend not on capacity or incapacity, but on the dynamic self-choice of the spirit, its delight of self-expression, on the truth of the divine's will and joy of itself in the individual, and, subordinately, on the truth of the thing that had to be done through the individual in the harmony of the totality. For the complete individual is the cosmic individual, since only when we have taken the universe into ourselves and transcended it, can our individuality be complete. The truth of the thing that had to be done, again going all the way back to the early Vedantic formulation in the Bhagavad Gita, kartavyam karma, but here, cast into a cosmic context, leads us to that completion. So the individual awakened to the right law of his being, working in utterest harmony with the world around, poised absolutely in the transcendent without blinking, without a moment of forgetfulness. Again, the image of Nataraj, the great, the dance of the divine, where all the universe is thrown out into multiple display, and yet that consciousness is ever poised in silence, never loses its peace, despite the tremendous activity that it expresses. The supramental being, in his cosmic consciousness, seeing and feeling all as himself, would act in that sense. He would act in a universal awareness and a harmony of his individual self with the total self, of his individual will with the total will, of his individual action with the total action. So you can see the walls of division are wholly gone. For what we most suffer from in our outer life and its reactions upon our inner life is the imperfection of our relations with the world, our ignorance of others, our disharmony with the whole of things, our inability to equate our demand on the world with the world's demand on us. So he's been consistent on each of these couple of paragraphs. He said, from which we most suffer. And it's always the same thing. Imperfection, division, limitation. There is a conflict. A conflict from which there seems to be no ultimate issue except an escape from both world and self between our self-affirmation and a world on which we have to impose that affirmation, a world which seems to be too large for us and to pass indifferently over our soul, mind, life, body in the sweep of its course to its goal. The relation of our course and goal to the world's is unapparent to us, and to harmonize ourselves with it, we have either to enforce ourselves upon it and make it subservient to us, or suppress ourselves and become subservient to it, or else to compass a difficult balance between these two necessities of the relation between the individual personal destiny and the cosmic whole and its hidden purpose. For us, then, there's this tensive balance between soul and nature, and who wins? We count one the victor and one the loser. Always trying to find mastery or subservience. But for the supramental being living in a cosmic consciousness, the difficulty would not exist, since he has no ego. His cosmic individuality would know the cosmic forces and their movement and their significance as part of himself, and the truth consciousness in him would see the right relation at each step and find the dynamic right expression of that relation. So there is no dividing wall separating individual from universe. For in fact, both individual and universe are simultaneous and interrelated expressions of the same transcendent being. Even though in the ignorance and under its law there is maladjustment and conflict, yet there must be a right relation, an equation to which all arrives, but which is missed by our blindness of ego. Our attempt to affirm the ego and not the self, one in all. The supramental consciousness has that truth of relation in itself as its natural right and privilege, since it is the supermind that determines the cosmic relations and the relations of the individual with the universe, determines them freely and sovereignly as a power of the transcendence. In the mental being, even the pressure of the cosmic consciousness overpowering the ego and an awareness of the transcendent reality might not of themselves bring about a dynamic solution. For there might still be an incompatibility between its liberated spiritual mentality and the obscure life of the cosmic ignorance, which the mind would not have the power to solve or overcome. So he's just described the second poise of the supramental. But in the supramental being, not only statically conscious, but fully dynamic and acting in the creative light and power of the transcendence, the supramental light, the truth light, Rittam Jyoti, would have that power. For there would be a unity with the cosmic self, but not a bondage to the ignorance of cosmic nature in its lower formulation. There would be, there would, on the contrary, be a power to act in the light of the truth on that ignorance. A large universality of self-expression, a large harmonic universality of world being would be the very sign of the supramental person in his Gnostic nature. So there's the first poise and the second poise, again described. We'll wait next week to touch upon the third poise of the supramental nature. It's a good place, I think, to put our bookmarks and close for this evening. Such a wonderful passage last week we were reading at the end of our study that I thought we'd come back and continue from that point for another page or so. This is in Book 1, The Book of Beginnings, Canto 3, The Yoga of the Soul's Release. In the unceasing drama carried by time on its long listening flood that bears the world's insoluble doubt on a pilgrimage without goal, a laughter of sleepless pleasure foamed and spumed, and murmurings of desire that cannot die. A cry came of the world's delight to be, the grandeur and greatness of its will to live, recall of the soul's adventure into space, a traveler through the magic centuries, and being's labor in matter's universe, its search for the mystic meaning of its birth, and joy of high spiritual response, its throb of satisfaction and content in all the sweetness of the gifts of life, its large breath and pulse and thrill of hope and fear, its taste of pangs and tears and ecstasy, its rapture's poignant beat of sudden bliss, the sob of its passion and unending pain. The murmur and whisper of the unheard sounds which crowd around our hearts but find no window to enter swelled into a canticle of all that suffers to be still unknown, and all that labors vainly to be born, and all the sweetness none will ever taste, and all the beauty that will never be. Inaudible to our deaf mortal ears, the wide world rhythms wove their stupendous chant, to which life strives to fit our rhyme beats here, melting our limits in the illimitable, tuning the finite to infinity. A low muttering rose from the subconscient caves, the stammer of the primal ignorance. Answer to that inarticulate questioning, there stooped with lightning neck and thunder's wings, a radiant hymn to the inexpressible and the anthem of the superconscient light. All was revealed there, none can here express. Vision and dream were fables spoken by truth, or symbols more veridical than fact, or were truths enforced by supernatural seals. Immortal eyes approached and looked in his, and beings of many kingdoms neared and spoke. The ever-living, whom we name as dead, could leave their glory beyond death and birth to utter the wisdom which exceeds all phrase. The kings of evil and the kings of good, appellants at the reason's judgment seat, proclaim the gospel of their opposites, and all believe themselves spokesmen of God. The gods of light and titans of the dark battled for his soul as for a costly prize. In every hour, loosed from the quiver of time, there rose a song of new discovery, a boatswain's hum of young experiment. Each day was a spiritual romance, as if he was born into a bright new world. Adventure leaped an unexpected friend, and danger brought a keen, sweet tang of joy. Each happening was a deep experience. There were high encounters, epic colloquies, and counsels came couched in celestial speech, and honeyed pleadings breathed from occult lips to help the heart to yield to rapture's call. And sweet temptations stole from beauty's realms, and sudden ecstasies from a world of bliss. It was a region of wonder and delight. All now his bride Claire audience could receive, a contact thrilled of mighty unknown things. Awakened to new unearthly closenesses, the touch replied to subtle infinities, and with a silver cry of opening gates, sight's lightnings leaped into the invisible. Ever his consciousness and vision grew. They took an ampler sweep, a loftier flight. He passed the border marked for matter's rule, and passed the zone where thought replaces life. Out of this world of signs, suddenly he came into a silent self where world was not, and looked beyond into a nameless vast. These symbol figures lost their right to live. All tokens dropped, our sense can recognize. There the heart beat no more at body's touch. There the eyes gazed no more on beauty's shape. In rare and lucent intervals of hush, into a signless region he could soar, packed with the deep contents of formlessness, where world was into a single being wrapped, and all was known by the light of identity, and spirit was its own self-evidence. The Supreme's gaze looked out through human eyes, and saw all things and creatures as itself, and knew all thought and word as its own voice. Their unity is too close for search and clasp, and love is a yearning of the one for the one, and beauty is a sweet difference of the same, and oneness is the soul of multitude. There, all the truths unite in a single truth, and all ideas rejoin reality. There, knowing herself by her own termless self, wisdom supernal, wordless, absolute, sat uncompanioned in the eternal calm, all-seeing, motionless, sovereign, and alone. Namaste, Jai Ma.